This podcast is primarily recorded on the traditional territories of the Huron-Wendat and Haudenosaunee peoples, in Cataraqui, or Kingston by its colonial name. We center the rightful stewards of this land in order to unsettle our fight for collective liberation.
Hello, my name is Maha, and I'm one of your hosts on Queer Muslim Resistance, a podcast from OPIRG Kingston. If you don't follow us on Instagram, you might be wondering why there's been such a big gap between our last episode and this one. I was overly optimistic earlier and thought releasing episodes bi-weekly couldn't be too hard because in our first sort of series, if you will, we released episodes weekly. But being bi-weekly actually wasn't that feasible for me with life happening. So episodes will now be released monthly. Thank you for your patience. We have so many wonderful guests lined up and I can't wait for y'all to hear their episodes. And just so you can kind of situate the episode within the larger project at this moment in time, guests before the last episode with Noor answered the following call-out questions, the answer to which I based their interview questions off of. The first question being, how would you describe the relationship to the land you occupy as a queer Muslim? And the second, what does collective healing mean to you? Guests in this current episode series were asked to answer the question, how does Islam and or being Muslim inspire you to seek justice through what you do? And the same question on collective healing as before. So we're expanding our conversations on fighting for collective liberation by taking a slightly different approach. And lastly, before I introduce you to our wonderful guest Sufi, I'm going to shout out our Patreon. If you like what we do and can support us financially, please do consider signing up to be a patron. It would mean a lot. Visit patreon.com/queermuslimresistance for more information. That's patreon.com/queermuslimresistance.
Hi, Sufi.
Hi, Maha.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm pretty tired, but I feel like that's the standard for me. But yeah.
Might just be the standard for everyone at this point because of our schedules, wacky schedules, working from home.
I feel that, yeah, probably. So let's do the introduction question. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your pronouns, your background, where you're based, and whatever else you'd like to share?
Yeah, of course. So I was born and raised in New York. I'm a first generation queer Pakistani who's an artist and an educator. My pronouns are she, him, and I'm currently based in California.
Nice. Cool. So you say that you're an artist and educator. Do you mind talking a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So I teach abstract art to pre-K, and I'm kind of like going into teaching that to middle school and elementary school at the moment, sort of like transitioning into that. So it's like fun and exciting and a bit challenging because of the age range. But I feel like I don't really talk about my teaching a lot. It's sort of like separate from my like social media identity.
That's fair.
But I've been teaching for I think like 6 years now.
That's so cool.
And then I think what was your, oh yeah, about being an artist. So I'm a photographer. I also write poetry, but I have like sort of stopped sharing my poetry just because I feel like it's like really private to me. And I'm like my own biggest critic. So I'll like write something and be like, oh, I feel like this is not good enough to put out, even though like I know that I have a lot of friends and people who follow me who want to see more of my work, my writing work. I just feel like I'm not ready yet. I will be. Yeah.
Do you mind sharing what kind of poetry you write and like how it helps you in any way?
Yeah, honestly, I think just like self-reflections and like I write stuff about growing up as a first generation Pakistani. Apart from being queer, I write about just my personal experiences and how I've like navigated through them with my intersecting identities. Yeah, just like a wide variety of things. Sometimes I'll just sit down and write whatever I feel and then just keep it in my journal. So yeah, just like lots of reflections that are super personal that turn into poetry.
That's so cool. And like, would you say that your photography is as personal as your poetry, or is there a personal element to your photography, or...
Yeah, I think that I'm actually really good at catching candid moments. Like whether I'm working with a client or like I'm doing a personal project or I'm just like photographing for fun with my friends, I tend to like capture really in the moment and intimate moments, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm also like really big on portraits, and then I'm also super big on like abstract photography, like just like taking photos of what I see, and not really adhering to any specific like way of photographing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's very cool. So what role has Islam had in your life so far?
I think Islam has definitely shaped and had an impact on my personal values, ones that I hold today, like the way that I view this dunya and what I give back to it, what I take from it. I know that's like kind of like a vague overview of how I navigate through life, but I grew up learning about Islam, like I probably started learning how to read the Quran when I was like 5. So, and then I also went into like reading it into English translations. I've read it in Arabic 3 times, read it in with English translations 2x. I still have like a Quran at home right now with English translations. And like on Jummas, I go back to it and like read things that I want to clarify some things on. And it's definitely still, and always will be, I think, a big part of my life. Yeah.
Yeah. And what is it about Islam that kind of holds you to it?
I think like the 5 pillars of Islam really like hold me accountable on like how I want to sort of like, I guess, live my life. You know, giving sadaqah, like giving charity, and then praying and remembering God and sort of just like being thankful for what I have and everything else that comes with that. I think in general, just like holds me accountable to like the kinds of morals and values that I grew up with, I want to continue to keep in my life and pass on to like next generations.
And what kind of morals did Islam kind of provide for you? And like, what kind of morals?
I think the most important one for me is not judging anyone based off of like, sort of like what you see on the exterior and on the outside. And I feel like a lot of Muslims nowadays, just judge really hard, like the haram police, and it's sort of like, I feel like a lot of the Muslim ummah is forgetting that Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam didn't like judging. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala doesn't like judging either. It's sort of just like you can't judge how Muslim someone is. It's actually like a big sin. And I think that a lot of people forget that because they see themselves as really pious and up there, sort of. And it's unfortunate to witness. And then also for myself, like as a visible queer Muslim Pakistani out there, to like receive that kind of negative feedback.
And like, I think you, because you were talking about like the haram police and like how people are kind of like they see themselves as so pious that like it's almost self-righteousness in a way, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, it's kind of dangerous too, because how are you supposed to grow and like get closer to God and be God conscious if you're not doing those things, if you're yeah. actively taking on the role that God has to like
yeah.
seemingly condemn people, right? Like, who are you to condemn people? Who are you to judge? Who are you to do any of these things, right? So
yeah
there's a lot yeah. of a lot of judgment I wish that didn't exist in mainstream Muslim communities. Mm-hmm. But I know as queer Muslims, many of us have complex and complicated relationships with finding and belonging in community, whatever mm-hmm. the community looks like to us. Mm-hmm. But what has that relationship been like for you?
So I definitely had a tough time trying to find community up until I was like maybe 21.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout high school and most of college, I was constantly around like hetero folks that I had to explain my identity to.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they would get it, other times they wouldn't, but they somewhat still respected it. And then I had this like transition phase where I started to meet lots of more like queer Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them Pakistani, mm-hmm. And making friends with them. And I actually got introduced to them like through my cousin. And that experience made me feel less isolated in my identity. And it was super validating for me. Enough for me to like just stop questioning who I was or what my life would be like if I wasn't gay and Muslim.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you said that your cousin introduced you to these people, so I feel like it's nice to have people in our families that are affirming of us and that are able to kind of connect us to community in different ways. Do you mind talking a little bit about like your queer Muslim friends and like how they've helped you kind of realize that you don't need to be questioning yourself?
Yeah, I think just like having shared experiences and then mm-hmm. also like having shared values and then being able to like bring that into one space and sort of like thinking to yourself like, wow, I don't have to like hide this part of myself to these people because they also share the same experiences as I do and like feelings as I do.
Mm-hmm.
And like just being able to like celebrate Eid with my queer Muslim friends, mm-hmm. like being able to like I haven't necessarily prayed with them, but that could be something cool that I could
mm-hmm.
do. Like dressing up and just like even going to like queer South Asian like parties and like just like basking in that sort of like
mm-hmm.
relatability
mm-hmm.
in our like experiences. So
yeah, no, that sounds lovely. That sounds so validating. And like I remember before, I feel like every queer Muslim has this kind of this or initially at least we experience this isolation of like there's no one else like us.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like this is the first time anyone's probably had to experience being queer and Muslim, but there's so many of us and it's so beautiful to see, right?
Yeah, I definitely think having access to social media and the way that it's sort of like rampant nowadays makes it easier to like not feel as isolated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like meeting folks through Instagram or Twitter or mm-hmm. whatever outlet it is. Like growing up for me, I didn't really have, like I had access to internet, but none of these like social media sites were up and running then. So it was kind of just like, you watch a queer South Asian movie and you're like, oh, okay, there's two people in this world who exist like me and feel the same way as I do. But there was nothing beyond that. So I definitely feel like it's super easier to feel more validated and like build community through social media and like just mm-hmm. the internet in general now than it was before. But yeah.
Yeah. How do you think like finding other queer Muslims and like being in community with them, and kind of how do you think that's impacted your art and like your photography and your poetry in terms of specifically coming into community and what that does to your art?
So I actually was a part of like this workshop for a few weeks in 2019, I believe. It was a part of this, well, I was like chosen to be a part of this workshop through Queer Crescent. I'm not sure if you've heard of them, but they're based in the, yeah, they're based in the Bay Area. And basically it was just like, went on for like 3 months, and every week we would like meet at a certain designated place. And there was like, I think about like 10 other queer Muslims there. And we would just like do reflections and like do like a healing through like one of the organizers like had prompts for us, and just like having, being in that space and feeling so connected and safe was really, really wonderful and validating, and I think definitely made me feel free in so many ways, and that obviously can impact one's art and reflections. So I definitely take a lot away from that time. And I like wish that everyone had access to that, or like those kinds of spaces. And when I say everyone, I mean like queer Muslims. the way that it's impacted my art, I'm not entirely sure how to answer that. I think that reflecting and like making art is always an ongoing process, and like I'm constantly changing and developing my style and just like learning new things and being a different person. So I think it just depends on like where you'll catch me in my life and the kind of person that I am then. And how that like affects my art.
No, that makes sense. And I know you have a large online platform. So what does being out mean for you in terms of how you navigate being queer and Muslim?
So I got my large online platform by being outed to the world from the Indian media. So it wasn't exactly a fun or easy process to have like such intense visibility overnight. And like having my existence and my relationship politicized and consumed from a point of view that didn't really exist in my relationship prior to us going viral. So I definitely have mixed feelings about that, but I learned early on in that process that I would be scrutinized by the Haram police, and I would kind of just like be cornered by like Muslims who didn't like what I was doing, Pakistanis who didn't like what I was doing, and then like also like Hindu folks being like, why are you Muslim and why are you dating a Hindu woman? So it was just like a lot of like
Yeah, and how did you navigate that? That must have been really, really hard.
It was super, hard. It was really hard, I think, especially in the first few months, because everything was so different and brand new. And there were like lots of people who were like super supportive, and like just saw so many things in me, and like saw me as like this one and only like representation that they've ever seen. And I think that that can bring like a lot of pressure to like choose my words carefully and you know, not hurt anyone's feelings by what I say. But I got through it. I weathered the storm. And I think that I'm definitely utilizing my platform for like different social causes. And like if I ever have anyone DM me like about boosting a GoFundMe or just like anything that is personal to me that I want to talk about, I definitely shed light on it. Mm-hmm. I think that there's always like space for accountability and like calling out. So I'm like always open to like feedback and like criticism mm-hmm. on how I can use my platform. So yeah.
What does the concept of Ummah mean to you? And have you thought about how this could link to queer liberation across borders?
Yeah, so I grew up in a predominantly like Muslim Sunni neighborhood, like not just my immediate family, like I grew up around a lot of my extended family as well. And then like we had like loads of like Muslims in my neighborhood, and we would have like khatams, like I don't really know how to translate that in English.
I don't know either.
Okay. but it's kind of just like when a bunch of Muslims get together and they pray and read the Quran for like a certain cause, like maybe if someone has passed away, for them, like for their soul to rest at peace, etc. So I think Ummah in general, like what I've known it to be growing up, is just like finding solidarity through community. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not quite sure how I feel like that links to queer liberation across borders, because I've really only been limited to my experience of making friends and connections and like listening and learning through like my friends' experiences like in the States, because I was born and raised here. Like I haven't been able to experience like what queerness looks like in Pakistan, and I would really love to see that and experience it, or like in India or in Palestine or like any other place that, you know, is like predominantly Muslim, but there is a queer scene out there and it's just like super underground. So I think I may have to come back to that question like once I've experienced that, but
for sure.
I definitely think that like I had mentioned before, social media can be a good like connecting factor if it's not in person. So for sure.
And there's so much, so this whole concept of Ummah is about community and coming together and doing things to get like being one together. So what does collective healing mean to you?
Collective healing means healing through solidarity, connection, shared experiences, intimate gatherings, collective expression, collective thought, interacting with community, and
And you talked about your experience with Queer Crescent earlier. How would you kind of link that back to collective healing?
I think I really, really always looked forward to the workshops that we had every week. And it kind of felt like when I would step into that space, I would step into a different world. And then, you know, we would like be in this bubble for like a few hours. And it would feel so healing and validating, and it was very creative too. You know, we like talked a lot about our like childhood experiences and what we took from that, and like how we feel at being queer Muslims like in certain spaces where we're not out. So I think that the answer that I actually gave for this question was like thoroughly inspired by my experience at Queer Crescent, and what I felt and experienced when I was a part of that, that experience.
That's awesome. And like, I think there's something so beautiful as well about, correct me if I'm wrong, but you said that there was like prompts and stuff that they asked you to work through and stuff. So I think it's an artistic process, and like being together with people doing art is healing. Like, I just think that's so cool.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. The organizer actually took that approach, and I think it was like an amazing approach because we did have time to like, I guess sort of like have talk therapy, because it sort of like felt like group therapy at some points, because we were all just like sharing our experiences as being queer Muslims. It definitely wasn't like a space where like a lot of trauma dump happened, like there were like clear boundaries around that because we didn't want to trigger anyone. But yeah, I think that approach really sort of like opened me up to wondering and visualizing like what, like you had mentioned, queer liberation looks like, or like Muslim queer liberation looks like, in the spaces that I exist in.
Mm-hmm. And then what does queer Muslim liberation look like for you and for the people you love?
Honestly, just like being able to not be judged for something that I can't control. And like, I feel like a lot of Muslim spaces, well, I know a lot of like liberal Muslim spaces that are super welcoming and accepting. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not sure if you're aware of Heart. They're on Instagram. Yeah. And then We Are Malika as well. Okay. I've sort of like done a, not a podcast, but like a talk with them. And yeah, just like, I know, like just knowing that spaces like that exist, through organizing and through community, like I just, I'm hoping that that continues to build up and build on, and that we just have like more access to those spaces as time goes on.
If there's queer Muslims listening to this podcast, which I'm assuming there are because that's the majority of our audience, what would you like them, like, what is one thing that you would like them to take away from what we've talked about today and just like from your life in general?
I think one of the things that I haven't mentioned that I really want to now, for folks to take away from, is definitely do your own research about your faith, and your religion, in our case, Islam. Because I know that a lot of like Wahhabis and like extremists always bring up the story of Lut and how that is like, God saying that we have to punish gays kind of thing. Yeah. And I won't really like go into it because it's actually really deep. I may talk about it on my own, like on my own platform sometime soon. But definitely do your own research and know that that story isn't just about gay folks. It's not about gay folks like just being haram in their existence, but it's about so many other things. And I'm hoping that there are like resources out there. I kind of like just had a workshop with that I learned about, a workshop with Heart and Queer Crescent actually collaborated together, and I was able to join that. But yeah, whenever someone sort of like questions you and your faith and your values through Islam, just be really confident in knowing that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is merciful, and you know, God just doesn't, you know, what a cruel world it would be if God just was like, well, I made you this way, but I don't like you. I don't think that's possible. But yeah, I think that's something that I want a lot of the queer Muslims out there to just remember and hold on to whenever they feel like their faith is being questioned by their family members or anyone outside of that community, inside of the community, whatever the case may be.
And I think that ties in well with like what you were saying earlier about the whole judgment thing, right? Because if you're able to make your own judgments about the faith and your own interpretations about the faith and like your own relationship with God, then no one can come in between that.
And that's exactly like what my mantra and like my thinking around these kind of like interactions that I have with people online have been. Mm-hmm. My relationship with my creator is mine and mm-hmm. for no one's to comment on. Mm-hmm. And that's literally how it will be like until the end of time.
Yeah.
So yeah, just like you gotta grow some thick skin. Even though it's a process and it's hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And is there anything else that you'd like to plug, and where can folks find you on the internet?
You can find me on Instagram at sufi.sun. Same thing on Twitter, sufi.sun7 on Twitter. And then I also have my website that I actually haven't updated in a while and will soon, in my Instagram bio. And those are like mostly the platforms that I exist on and sort of like speak out on. And apart from my own socials, like I think I just want to shout out another cool organization that I have been affiliated with before and also done a talk for. They're called Hidaya, and they're based in the UK. I'm not sure if you've heard of them. Mm-hmm. Just like trying to give listeners like resources to like look into. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if like they're offering workshops or anything like that, but
there's a lot of really cool queer Muslim organizations now that are just doing awesome work like all over. So yeah, there's actually in the Instagram bio of Queer Muslim Resistance Podcast's Instagram, we have a queer Muslim resource guide that has links to a bunch of other accounts and like media and all the things that you would potentially need to feel validated as queer and Muslim.
Wow, that's awesome. I'd love to like boost that.
Yes, please. Thank you so much. That would be great if you did.
Yeah, totally done. Heart, We Are Malika, Hidaya, and Queer Crescent based in the Bay Area are all like really good orgs that you could support and donate to if you'd like to, so they can keep on doing what they do and the kind of work that they put out there.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you. Hello, Taylor and Nicole.
Hi. Hi, Mama.
It's good to see you both.
Yeah, it's together. Good to be back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So does anyone want to start us off?
First off, I was fangirling a lot, mm-hmm. because it was like, oh my gosh, I've seen this person in videos. You know, this is a person I knew before just from like YouTube and mm-hmm. you, Maha.
I read her name and I had to go to Instagram and I was like, I do follow him. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And I was I was fangirling, feels like a weird word to put to it, but I was like, oh, I love like his like relationship, like what you see on Instagram, like it's so beautiful. And like anywho, I felt the same way because I was like, wait, I know this name.
Really? Yeah, I was like, oh, this is a person I know, this is cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, all our guests are cool in all their ways,
of course,
we acknowledge. I think there's just larger numbers that know Sufi. Yeah, and that's a fair statement. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Taylor, I know we were talking earlier.
Mm-hmm, as we do very often.
Yes, we always talk to each other while we're listening to the episode, and so we frequently pause it as we're listening to be like, wait, and this.
So, Sufi was saying how being non-judgmental is important, and how, you know, practicing mercy and being merciful with other people and basically watching your own business and all of that stuff is important, and it's something that especially Muslims should aspire to do. And I think personally for me, I like in the work that we all do, really, that's something that we try to do is be non-judgmental. So I'm going to have a little personal brag and say, I just got a job and I'm really excited about it. And I'm excited about this new role that I have. It's really working with people and getting to talk to people and interact with them in so many different aspects of their life, like their daily living. And it's all about not being judgmental. Like, I can't walk into my job with assumptions about people because then I will fail at my job. Mm-hmm. And so I practice that, and I know how to practice that. And I know that, you know, praying teaches me to be compassionate with other people, but I've been having a really hard time doing that for myself. Mm-hmm. Maha's constantly been reminding me, like, you know, Taylor, you can't be so hard on yourself. Taylor, you can't, like, don't. I'm always afraid that other people are judging me because I'm judging myself really harshly. And it's a fear I have for some reason. It's like a new insecurity that's developed. And I just find it so interesting that you can practice being non-judgmental and compassionate with other people and have that be a part of the way you live your life. And then it's so hard to do it with ourselves, you know?
Mm-hmm. 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 And like, do you want to, I mean, maybe you don't want to, but I was going to say, do you want to talk about the ways in which you're harsh on yourself? Like, what specifically about being queer and Muslim makes you hard on yourself?
I think that I have all of these assumptions about what a queer, like specifically like what traditional Sunni Shia Muslims will think of queer Muslims. You know what I mean? Like, I had this, like, I think I come at it already at a defensive, which makes me fear that I'm going to be judged because I'm assuming that that's what you think. And then I start policing myself in ways. Like, in the beginning, I was really, really unsure about wearing the hijab and being out with Maha because I was like, I don't want anybody to see me. I don't want anybody to. And that's a reasonable fear. Like, fear of safety is also a reasonable fear. Mm-hmm. But I think it was more than just safety. I was really afraid of being judged, like people thinking, oh, that's not possible. And Maha said something to me today that was like awesome. You said, what'd you say? I have to be. You're like, I have no context. What are you talking about? You said that my way of being Muslim is a way to be, or something like that. Not, you didn't say that exactly, but we were sitting at the tree in the park, and Maha, you know, was saying that show people that I'm a Muslim that exists, you know, essentially, because I was very nervous. One of my anxieties was popping up, and I've been really just stressed out about, especially wearing a hijab. I'm very nervous about how other people are reading me, and then I feel like all of my actions are in spotlight. Mm-hmm. And so Maha was like, okay, then be a hijabi that does these things. Like, they've probably never seen a lesbian hijabi or a queer hijabi before. Like, let's do it, you know? And that was a great way of putting it, because then I felt like, oh wow, representation, here I am. Mm-hmm. And we did say that earlier. But yeah, it's been hard to not be so judgmental on myself. Mm-hmm. And
well, it's easy to point out how your friends or how your partner, how other people are like creating representation for themselves, but it is harder to like show it in yourself because you're the one feeling that fear as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like, is this a new fear, or is this something that you were also like, we don't have to talk about this if you don't want to.
Yeah.
Is this a fear that you felt prior to converting, or is it something that's like more emulated from like, you know what I mean?
Well, you know what? I feel like, and Sufi mentioned this, the haram police. Mm-hmm. I feel like the haram police is so similar to like really strict Catholic people.
Yes.
Who are like, you can't do this and you can't do that, and this is the right way to do it, and actually if you do it this way it's wrong, and you know, like, except with being Muslim, there are so many particularities. Like, there, it's really so many, like, I learn new things that people can police women on every single day.
Every day. appreciate that Sufi mentioned, and please, like, Maha, tell me if I'm wrong, or Taylor, because I listened to this morning and then work was wild. But Sufi mentioned that there is, like, a part either in the Quran or just something that the Prophet Muhammad said about Lena. Not about Lena.
That would be funny.
About how being that critical and being, like, essentially, like, that nitpicky and that, like, judgmental of somebody is, like, that's such a huge flaw. Like, picking somebody else apart that you don't know is such a huge flaw that, like, it's hard because obviously you're going to be concerned about people that are going to judge you, but, like, also just know that, like, they should be aware that their behavior is not acceptable and you should be able to exist, right?
This was also something I wanted to bring up. It was in relation to the Haram police as well. There was this idea, I've been seeing this idea go around where it's like, apparently it is, you know, it is your Muslim duty, right? To tell somebody when they're doing wrong, to essentially tell somebody when they're sinning, right? Like, you shouldn't let a sin happen and not
be like a passive bystander.
Be a passive bystander, right? Like, sorry, there's this.
I shouldn't be laughing.
But that's the belief. So it's like, well, I'm not homophobic. I just can't accept gay people because it would be wrong, right? Like, whatever. And I think the thing that I think Sufi mentioned and you mentioned, Maha, it's like, what you miss in looking, there's a saying in Christianity, before you check for the stone in your, or the glass, the piece of glass in your brother's eye, check for the one in your eye. You know, I don't know, I said the saying wrong, but essentially, you know the saying?
No.
Oh, damn. I said the saying wrong. It's like, you know, before you, and I know it's in Christianity, but like in Catholicism, there's, before you check for somebody else, look at what's going on in yourself. There's this idea like, I'm doing it out of the concern for your well-being, right? Like, I'm telling you out of general concern for your well-being. I don't want to see you go to hell, whatever, right? And I think in that idea, it's like, so you just decided that you know better than me and all the other people who exist. You are expert. You have leveled yourself
to God.
If not to God, close to God, because you now can tell people how to read and how to interpret. When God gave me a brain, God gave me two eyes. Thank you for your advice, but I didn't ask for it. You know what I mean? Like, out of my concern and well-being, like, be concerned about my health. Be concerned about my safety. Be concerned about my financial income. You know, those would really help my well-being. You know what I mean? Like,
there's also something that Sufi said, I believe, or else she was paraphrasing somebody, but it was something to the ends of, like, God created me in God's eyes. So, like, who are you to say that, like, I'm, like, flawed, or, like, I can't reach out in the exact words, but, like, who are you to say that, like, who I am is not perfect?
Yeah,
essentially. And it was, I think, basically what you're trying to say.
I guess something that I wanted to talk about was in relation to when Sufi was talking about, like, finding community with queer Muslims, and, like, how important it is to find people with shared experiences and values. And I feel like this isn't necessarily limited to just queer Muslim or communities with just queer Muslims. Like, this is, like, I'm personally referring to, like, the communities that queer Muslims create that, you know, contain the people, or contains a weird word, but you know what I mean. The people who we love and who we trust to work towards futures of liberation with. But when you're constructed as impossible, then you internalize this, like, supposed fact that you're an anomaly and that you're the only person like this, as being queer and Muslim specifically in this context, because you couldn't be possible as a possibility, like, your possibility.
You're so isolated as an idea that, like, there's no possibility that, like, there's more than just one of you, especially not, like, if not within the world, not within your city, or, like, things like that. And it's,
yeah. And, like,
it's all about like finding community then based on this is a form of resistance. Like Sophie said, like finding solidarity through community. It shows you the generative power of relationships that defy normative truths about like who we are, or rather who we aren't. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't want to stop just there either. Like I want to think about what these communities and what these relationships can do and like what work they do. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, I mean, exactly what Sophie said in the episode, it wasn't always like this. It wasn't always you could search up queer Muslim. Mm-hmm. You know, like you resources, finding connections were a lot harder. And so I'm grateful and thankful to God that I have these connections. First off, that I met you, and through you, I have all these connections, really. But that hopefully we can reach people. And obviously not everybody's on Instagram, and not everybody will, you know, a lot of spaces are hush hush for safety, which makes sense. But it's not, I think we're moving in a direction where, God willing, we can start, you know, being who we are. You know what I mean? Like, people are who they are, but like outwardly, period.
You don't have to think about like hiding any part of yourself when you around strangers and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, like whatever that looks like. And it, you know, for some people they might think that we're there, but we're not. Like, the reality is we're not for most people.
But like, so, exactly what you're saying, just because some people can doesn't mean everybody.
Exactly.
Like, until every single person, I listened to this podcast, I cannot remember. Okay, you guys know who Nicole Byer is.
Mm-hmm.
Maha knows that I love Nicole. I think Taylor does too, but she said either on her podcast or on someone else's podcast, essentially, like, they were talking about hiring actors, and they were talking about hiring like Black actors. And it was like, until it's no longer like something that we have to like fight for to have like equal representation of Black actors, until you're not like fighting for somebody like for this representation, like, then you can't have, I have lost it. Okay. Goodbye.
Yeah. Like, I think I understand if you're still fighting, if you still have to fight for basic representation or representation for someone you haven't, like,
yeah. Like, then you still have to fight for it, right? Like, you can't give up, like, constantly, like, fighting for that representation, because, like, until the most marginalized people are able to just exist without people needing to, like, without needing to fight for that space, mm-hmm. you're not done fighting, because that's what, like, collective liberation is.
And I think people, like, we talk about this all the time, but people miss that as the basic move, like basic action of what we're called to do in the Quran. Mm-hmm. Like, be a person who doesn't oppress people, period.
But that's the fucking most basic thing.
I saw this, we need to get over this. And I saw this thing about, you know, it was a video that Maha told me not to watch, obviously, but it was basically,
and she watched it.
I will always watch the shit, like, the same, like,
really. And I watched it, but like, I was so surprised by the argument. So this person was basically saying, you know, gay people are only gay because they were doing gay things, you know, like you had sex with somebody. And I was like,
wait, what was the context of this?
It was why homosexuality isn't allowed in Islam, because I torture myself like that. If you want to torture yourself, go on the internet.
No, and don't do
bullshit
it.
Like,
don't
that.
Do it.
Don't do it is the advice we give. But yeah, like, but I was just so floored, because I was expecting to hear some complex argument, whatever the fuck, right? Really, it was, you're gay because you did gay shit? Really?
It's not being complex, though. Was it complex in Christianity? No. Is it complex in Islam? No. Is it complex anywhere? No, because it doesn't make sense, because the core of these religions is, like, God made you in God's, like, please correct me if I'm wrong.
God's image.
Like, image.
Yes.
Creator made, like, you know what I mean? Like, why are so many people going to be bad? Like, that's such a fucked up thought. And that's why it's not complex. And that's why, like, you know what I mean? When you go, like, when you look at people, it's the same thing as, like, misogyny, and you're like, hey, let's unpack why you think this thing. Like, okay, cool, this is your thought. Why do you think that? Okay, so like, okay, but like, why? But why? Like, let's keep going. I want to, like, you explain to me why you think I shouldn't exist. Oh, okay. Like, didn't, I don't know anything about it. Like, I don't know anything. I don't know that much about Islam, but like in Catholicism, I'm like, didn't, like, aren't you supposed to like treat thy neighbor as like you wish to be treated? Isn't it one of your like top commandments? But like, apparently I'm a sinner. I can exist, but you can't bless my marriage. Like, you know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense because God made us in God's image.
If you can imagine, you know, an ounce, a quarter of the fullness and diversity in the world, why on earth do you stop there when it comes to humans? Why do people demand for people to be the same, you know, look like them, act like them, talk like them, you know, like it's, and think the worst part, that it is ordained by God.
Mm-hmm.
What? That makes no sense.
I think if it's because if it's different, right? Like if it's at all different, then the people who are in charge lose their power, right? Mm-hmm. Like think about who wrote the Bible. Think about like who wrote like the Torah, right? Like they were mainly like cis, at least from what we know, men, right? And like, I mean, I know. No, that's really rude.
I love that Nicole's always like, that's rude.
It's rude and she should know it. No, I don't appreciate it. Are you gonna behave? Thank you. Yeah, I love you too.
Oh my God.
She must behave. Yeah, I know. Yes.
I really liked exactly what you said, Maha, about and reflecting on what Sufi said about collective liberation and the fact that what we generate, even if it's in release, like the ways we spend time with each other, being critical, laughing, praying, whatever it is, it is generative. It powers us. It allows us to keep being who we are and keep, you know, fighting for our existence in the ways that we do. And, you know, sometimes, and I think maybe also with this podcast, it's pleasant to get the opportunity to stop and celebrate and reflect and appreciate what we have as community and the mm-hmm. community that we build, because mm-hmm. this is liberatory shit. Like we're like, we are Maha joked, someone, where's our contract? What did you say?
What are you talking about?
The other day when I said, when's the last time you saw a Black and South Asian, Black and South Asian queer couple?
Mm-hmm.
And you said,
Hire us. That's what I said.
You know, like the truth is, all of us, like we are all unique. It's cheesy AF, but the fact that our uniquenesses aren't celebrated means that we need to make them important. And we do that in the work that we do and in the connecting and building of community that we have. And that's the liberation aspect. We are freeing ourselves. With each other, we're freeing ourselves. And finding new community, even when that community itself on the surface seems hostile to you, but being able to find community nonetheless is empowering shit.
Mm-hmm. Also super healing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's empowering. Mm-hmm. I think so. Like you're not alone. You thought you were alone. You thought perhaps mm-hmm. You couldn't do this. There weren't as many like you. And slowly but surely you find that, oh, people are doing this and maybe it is possible. You know, like mm-hmm. the thing that you thought was impossible is possible. And that's because you're finding and learning more about different communities and being a part of larger, more diverse communities.
Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of relates to like how I personally think about the concept of queer Muslim resistance.
Yeah.
Like the fact that we are queer Muslims resisting is so important because like when we're isolated, you're meant to feel like you're alone. You're meant to feel powerless. But when you come together, you can see your power reflected in others in through your relationships.
Yeah.
Yep. And so it's not just that relationships in themselves are liberatory, but what you do with those relationships is liberatory.
Amen. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I felt for Sufi in a way that like his relationship was outed. Fucking sucks.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to say that like that's really shitty, and I hope like I'm glad that she was able to feel helped by her community after.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Queer Muslim Resistance. As always, you can find relevant links in the episode description. Make sure to check us out on Instagram for links to our Queer Muslim resource guide, to sign up for Tarif, a Queer Muslim reading group, and for awesome Queer Muslim content in general. If you like who we are and what we do, please consider supporting us financially on Patreon. Visit us on patreon.com/queermuslimresistance for more information. That's patreon.com/queermuslimresistance. And you can email us at queermuslimresistance@gmail.com if you have any inquiries, additional resources you'd like to see added to the resource guide, or just to say hi. And a huge, 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 huge thank you to our volunteers, Abrar, Aram, and Zara, for their wonderful help. This episode and future episodes would not be possible without you.